and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map, and today my guests are Adam and Lance, co-founders of Houston-based Hitched, Inc. Hitched is an energy tech startup that acts as the Airbnb of industrial equipment. It's grown rapidly, and today on the podcast, Adam and Lance talk about their growth and how they are deploying funding from their $5.5 million Series A that closed earlier this year. Adam, Lance, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, appreciate it.
So I want to talk about your company, Hitched. I want to know where this idea came about, because I've heard you describe it on other podcast platforms as the Airbnb for industrial equipment. So where did that come from? Where did that idea come from?
Yeah, so Lance and I come from, you know, the oil and gas service business. And frankly, you know, there was just a need for it in the market, right? Availability of equipment was scarce. You know, everything was done via phone calls, spreadsheets, so on and so forth. And so we, you know, because of another business we were involved in, you know, we just saw a big need for, you know, the innovation of that process.
Lance, how exactly does it work? How do users get involved?
Okay, well, I think as any marketplace, right, there's two sides to kind of what the marketplace is and does. If you're, you know, so we've broken it down like marketplaces, right? You have, you know, end users and we have providers. You know, end users use the platform and providers provide goods, services, and equipment to the platform in order to be utilized. And so for an end user, right, whether you're an operator in oil and gas or a service company and you need to buy things, you need to rent things, right? You use this as one, a place to go and find other great providers, or you use it as a way to manage all your job sites. Mm-hmm. I'm going to steal one of Adam's lines. We visualize everything through the lens of a job site. Okay. And so that's one of the things that we've really keyed in on for our operators is all of the cost and optimization side of the business really is based around optimizing that piece of their business through our platform. And so we kind of pull together both sides, both the equipment, all the goods and services to the lens of the job site for the operators.
Mm-hmm. So who exactly are you targeting for your user base?
Yeah, so it varies. You know, on the provider side, obviously rental and service companies based in the oil and energy sector. Mm-hmm. On the end user side, oil and gas operators, right? The Chevron, Shells, XTO, EOGs, the end user operators, frankly. Now, in a lot of cases, we end up renting to service companies that, you know, work for the operators, and we rent them equipment, but you know, our target audience on the end user side is oil and gas operators.
Do you foresee, I guess, expanding out of that in specific industry or?
Yeah, so as we've built this technology, we've, you know, our technology is industry agnostic, right?
Yeah.
And so the same problems you see in energy exist in construction and mining and other industrial sectors. So, you know, energy was kind of the low-hanging fruit for us, being that we've been in this industry for, you know, 10 years now, you know, with our contacts and whatnot. But frankly, it just makes sense to move out into other industrial spaces.
Yeah, similar spaces have that same critical, you know, juncture point where as we look at budgets, as we look at streamlining, you know, and the whole concept of a marketplace leverages off of, you know, where am I at on a daily basis? Am I getting the best deal? If it is the best deal or I'm not getting the best deal, where do I go to find the best deal? Mm-hmm. And so by combining a marketplace and a management platform, you know, that allows us to solve this particular problem in oil and gas. But really, we've designed it to go, you know, you can look at construction, you can look at mining, you can look at really any industrial application. We've designed this to go in and solve a similar problem in a little bit different way.
What are some of the most popular items that people use and rent from?
You know, really your standard surface rental stuff, light towers, generators, pumps, portable toilets, trash trailers, you know, just your simple, you know, surface rental equipment. A lot of the equipment's rented across, you know, different industries, right? I mean, construction, mining, energy, they all use generators and lights and bathrooms, right? And so, you know, between those pieces of equipment and your typical material handling, forklifts, loaders, and things of that sort, right? That makes up probably 60% of our business today.
So for the providers, is this Are they really able to make kind of a revenue stream out of this?
Yeah, so we're not doing anything but connecting them with the work, you know, and in a down market like it is today, right, the value of utilization is very high, right? And so we act as the intermediary, right, finding the end users, connecting. We handle all the logistics. But, you know, it's essentially like them working direct for the customers, right? Mm-hmm. We're just getting their equipment where it needs to be assigned to a job site, right, so they can better track, you know, the revenue that they're earning, and vice versa. The end users can track what they're spending on equipment by job site.
One of the hard parts about oil and gas that's true in construction as well is just knowing what jobs are going on when, right? Mm-hmm. And so there may be really great companies who have a super good solution, but they may not know that there's an RFP going out. They may not know that there's a need. And so you're kind of limited by what your contact basis is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reality is there probably are great providers that you don't have access to. So, and users who actually need your product. So ultimately, when you look at basically what Hitched is, we're the ultimate free salesperson that helps get you in front of all those people. And that's really exciting for our providers.
Did the providers that use Hitched, were they previously just making those calls and using them? Are there some of them, you know, brand new to kind of renting out their equipment?
Yeah, so how it used to work, right, is, you know, the end users would get on the phone and they'd call the salesperson, and then they'd call the operations person, who calls the maintenance person, who calls the guy in the yard to see if equipment's available, right? All these people have been in the rental industry, right? These are rental companies that are our providers, right? Gotcha. What we've done is we've innovated the process, right? So nobody has to pick up the phone. You can see availability in real time. You can track logistics in real time, right? And so just automating, right? Mm-hmm. Technology that was in Silicon Valley, you know, 20 years ago, right, is like a new thing in oil and gas, right? And so what's been innovated for many years, right, oil and gas hasn't innovated with it, right? And so bringing the automated side of the rental industry, right, into oil and gas, right, has really streamlined the process. And just like anything else, when you streamline a process, you add efficiency, cost savings, so on and so forth.
So earlier this year, I know you closed a Series A, a $5.5 million Series A. So clearly, the investors you're involved with saw something special and Hitched. So what was that feedback? What were those conversations like?
You know, I think, you know, Cottonwood's been great. That's the venture firm here in Houston that mm-hmm. we raised our round from, our A round anyways from. I think what they saw is the opaqueness in the market and the opportunity to really provide visibility into this sector. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a lot of traction early, quite a bit of revenue mm-hmm. early, right, which is really the only thing that matters when you're raising venture capital. But, you know, we had a good jump on it. And, you know, I think really management's vision behind what we're doing is what ultimately got them so involved in such a big way.
Yeah, and just to kind of add on to that, I think one of the key things that Adam and I tried to structure when we were founding this business is coming from the industry where we were solving the problems we had in our own chemical companies and mm-hmm. Rouseabout companies and service companies was we want to be mainline to the revenue stream of what the industry needs. So anything that like you can't live without in oil and gas, it was really important that we be involved in that. And so the transaction of equipment, the transaction of chemicals, the getting of the allocation of equipment and where it goes and how it functions, you can't function within oil and gas if you don't have a good handle on that. So it's important that we structure our company based around that main vein of revenue. And I think by doing that, Kant would notice where I think technology comes in with great ideas of new and different innovative things. We said we're going to keep the same, you know, face-to-face, hardworking handshake type of business experience that we were used to, but we're going to bring a data and a technical advantage that hadn't existed. And by being involved in the main vein of what we need to do to operate well, then we become sticky with our customers and ultimately the industry. And I think they noticed that. They saw it different than other investments they had done. And ultimately, I think it made a great partnership for the both of us.
I mean, and they're local And they are very tapped into the oil and gas industry. So do you feel like Cottonwood has kind of opened some doors, you know, in more ways than just money?
No, absolutely. I mean, these guys come from this industry, have a lot of contacts into the industry, high level executives at large companies, right? And so that's, you know, that's played a big role in, you know, driving our business forward like we have for sure. So, and frankly, just having them, you know, on our board and having them involved in the business, not necessarily on a day-to-day basis, right? But the knowledge that those guys bring and the expertise that they have, you know, based around the financial side of the business and energy experience, you know, has been extremely valuable to our team.
Sounds like it was a pretty smooth fundraising process, which I'm sure a lot of startups envy a little bit. Would you say it was kind of a approachable way to get in?
I mean, I would never say that fundraising is smooth.
It's always easy, or anything.
You make it sound so smooth.
Yeah, I mean, with them though, I mean, it was pretty cut and dry.
Yeah.
It was pretty straightforward. You know, didn't take very long. We closed on December 23rd of 2019 and, you know, had a good jump on 2020. So, yeah. I mean, for us, it was all pretty straightforward. And, you know, they wanted to partner with us and we wanted to partner with them. And, you know, we just meshed and made it happen.
Yeah. Nice thing about Cottonwood is they were very clear with their expectations of us. And we set out a good path in advance. And it was almost like benchmarks for us to go hit. And we kept knocking those off and we kept in good communication. And as Adam and I got close, you know, there was no surprises or things we weren't expecting. And so it made the transition smooth.
Yeah. So in what ways are you deploying the funds? What are you using it to grow?
Yeah, so, I mean, really we've ramped up our sales efforts. We've brought on quite a few more developers to build out feature sets of our technologies. But, you know, frankly, if there was two areas of the business where, you know, the majority of the funds are going to go, it's going to be to sales and development, right? Mm-hmm. We need great salespeople to sell our product. We need fantastic developers to create innovative solutions. So, you know, as a whole, right, granted, we spend some money on marketing and some other things, but frankly, as a whole, those two buckets are really the focus of the cash that we raised.
It's kind of crazy to me that y'all are very recently launched. 2018, that's pretty recent, right?
It's so pretty new.
I mean, how have things kind of changed in those just a couple years? And where are you going?
Yeah, so, I mean, when you say change for a startup is like eating breakfast, right? I mean, we talk about the daily roller coaster, right? We have one thing go right and you're on top of the world, and in 20 minutes or so, the roller coaster's down and then you're back up. And that's just part of the journey, right? For us, from a long-term perspective, so we have short-term revenue goals that we're trying to hit and grow, and platform goals and personnel goals. And, you know, we subscribe to the OKR model and we set out, you know, good objectives and with our team. And then we put into place key results that we track on a daily basis, and that kind of helps us stay on track. But ultimately, it's to become the marketplace and management tool in all oil and gas. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to be the go-to place where all equipment, goods, and services are sold and where these operators can manage, because it comes down for us as a function of we've lived in the oil and gas environment and our friends, family, you know, we've lived through the cyclical nature of oil being up and everybody spending and oil being down and they're all losing their jobs and, you know, having stress and struggle and trials. And so our main goal and focus was to bring a platform that brings visibility and accountability to a market where, you know we have great people, we know we have great technologies, we know we have great services, and it's about, you know, bringing some visibility and accountability into the disintermediation that's happening within the industry. And by doing that, the ups and downs of the commodities market shouldn't affect all of us as much. And so by doing that and by, you know, bringing what we consider our part to the industry, we then change how it's done forever. And ultimately, the jobs of our friends and family members who have service companies, who are operators, who are drillers, who are doing that sort of stuff, then, you know, their livelihood is better and it makes our industry and our economy much, much better.
So based here in Houston, but where can users rent the machinery?
Yeah, so currently we're West Texas, South Texas, New Mexico. We've got some equipment in Oklahoma. We're in the process of expanding into up the Marcellus, Utica area. We just hired our first two employees, one in Pennsylvania, one in Ohio. So that's to come in the next few months. But really concentrated, if you look at the business today, concentrated in Texas and the surrounding states.
You still touched on a lot of areas in the United States. So that's a lot of growth. So when it comes to, I know you've talked a little bit about the industry. So what other trends are you seeing in the industry? I know you referenced Silicon Valley and the oil and gas industry being behind in technology. I think most people can agree. They see that. So sure. What else are we catching up on?
You know, I think streamlining oil and gas is what everybody's trying to do, right? I mean, mm-hmm. if you look at, I've always said that industrial technology will follow the path of consumer technology, right? And so if you look back at Uber and you look back at, you know, Airbnb and you look back at, you know, Favor and the guys that deliver your groceries and things like that, right? You don't have those types of technologies in industrial yet, right? But now that the consumer market has perfected those, right, I think that oil and gas, not just specifically oil and gas, but industrial will follow, right? And so the same types of efficiencies, I mean, you ask anybody, right? Would you go to Target and buy this, or would you rather just buy it on Amazon and have it delivered to your door? I mean, that's a no-brainer, right? That's why big box stores, that's why Sears is bankrupt. That's why you look across the, you know, the big box stores in the country and why they're going out of business, right? Because it's easier, right? There's two things that we're solving for. Number one is convenience. Number two is visibility, right? If we can be the most convenient platform out there, right, and give people the most visibility into their business, then we'll win.
Yeah, Adam's right. The key metric that we're tracking today is convenience. And, you know, that flows into many other things. You know, it flows into profitability. It flows into processes and operations. It flows into logistics and supply chain, right? Because, you know, it's human nature to want to find the simplest route, and hopefully it's the most beneficial route. And so by solving for convenience for both our providers and operators, we free them up to do other critical tasks within their business, aside from doing what a technology can provide for them at basically little to no cost.
It's interesting that you bring up how kind of, you know, some of this industrial technology is kind of coming from the consumer-facing technology. What's another example, and maybe you'll have different answers, of something you're keeping an eye on in consumer technology that might have an application in industry?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think the ability to, I mean, everybody wants to play a part within the role, right? And we have been oil and gas sales guys. Mm-hmm. And because we've been out there, been on the grind, been knocking the doors, tearing up the pavement, so to speak, we understand how hard that process is. But there's mm-hmm. great people out there who've spent a lifetime and a career developing good relationships and good rapport and understanding different people's businesses. And so one of the things that we've talked about is, you know, how do we incorporate the rest of our – really any industrial industry is run off of – you know, sales reps and companies, and how do we take this dynamic and how do we make it work for the people who have worked so hard to build out these relationships? Because it's not just we're friends, it's mm-hmm. an intimate understanding of somebody else's business. And so how do we kind of bring them into the fold, and how do we put together some sort of a, you know, an influencer program or an affiliate program where these people who have done all this great legwork, we've been there, we've done it. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we help them grow their, you know, their net worth and their, the, you know, really the totality of their network through using our platform and being inclusive versus exclusive?
Calling all industrial influencers.
That's right, calling all industrial influencers. Yeah. What about you, boy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where it's headed, right? And the influencer side of the industrial market is not here yet, but it's coming, right? And so if you look at, you look at consumer brands and the way consumer products transact today, right? It's based on, you know, who's influencing it, right? Who's backing it, right? And industrial will be the same way, right? If you look at, like, I'll use Fyre Festival as an example. You know, you've got one of the Kardashian girls or whatever post one orange square, right?
Yeah.
And then you have, right, that's all they needed to go the distance, right? Industry will be there one day. It's not there today. But I think here in the near future, there'll be some people pinpointed in the industrial sector that will serve as impactful influencers.
Well, and obviously, too, like, I mean, the easiest one for us to look at and target and, like, model ourselves after, and it's, I mean, it's maybe a little facetious to say, but, like, Amazon, right? We are essentially combining an e-commerce platform and a rental platform and a management platform, which nobody has yet done, especially for industrial. And so as we look at the different ways they shape what they're doing, we say, okay, great. Can we take a piece of this and add it into what we're doing? Or how do we change this piece to make it fit more of our customer set? Because it's much more complicated to rent things out that are not like, hey, this is my home and it's $10 a day, right? We've got payment terms and billing cycles, and we're not only we're doing the rental of the equipment, but we're doing the servicing, we're doing the fueling, we're doing the insurance, we're doing the financing, right? And so there's all these arms that we're starting to reach out and kind of take on, kind of similar under that model of the consumer side for technologies. But, you know, as we kind of grow the product offering, you know, it's just our way of trying to give more value back to our customers.
Yeah, I think it's right in line with y'all haven't mentioned the M word, but millennials taking over the workforce. And it seems very much like that's going to kind of go right into your thoughts for emerging technology.
Yeah. So to that point, I mean, I just, if you look at, and this is reality, right? If you look across the energy sector, the construction sector, the guys making the decisions are getting younger every day, right? And the millennials are starting to move into executive roles, management roles, things of that sort, right? And so, you know, the question we ask a lot of times in sales meetings is, like, do you use Favor to deliver your groceries? Well, of course I do. Mm-hmm. Do you use Grubhub to bring dinner to your family? Well, of course. What's the difference? Right? There is no difference, right? But it's all about comfortability, right? And changing the process, right? And you know, people are used to doing things a certain way. They're used to picking up the phone, and they're used to calling their buddy to get a forklift and so on, right? So it's just really the technology adoption is based around breaking old habits, essentially.
Sure.
And once those habits are broken, right, we'll move into exactly what you saw in the consumer space, right? Why would you ever get in the car, drive down the road to Target to buy anything? There's no reason to.
Amazon, Airbnb, Uber, they're teaching us how to spend our money. And as millennials, we're, you know, a lot of them have grown up with the technology, so they don't know any different. So why fight the system? Why not say, great, they've already spent all this money to teach people how to spend this way. Let's just go show them how to do it in the industrial sector.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet there's a bit of an educational component with
sure.
with pitching or with, you know, connecting with kind of future users. So, and I know that there are other kind of startups that are in this world of having to educate their clients and their user base along with trying to earn their business. So how's that been a bit of an extra challenge for y'all?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, educating about what we're doing is one thing, but just like anything else, right, the key to technology is simplicity, period. Mm-hmm. How do we get somebody to buy in two clicks? How do we get somebody to buy in one click, right? How do we get somebody to buy in three clicks, right? That's where you win. Because if you look at consumer tech, right, you can book an Uber ride, you type in an address, you book an Uber ride, one click, right? It's simple, it's easy, right? So we're solving for simplicity. And frankly, you know, these tech companies build the most complex app in the world, but ultimately you have to have end users that you'll never see, you'll never touch, you'll never talk to, that are coming onto your platform to use it, that have to be able to navigate and have to be able to use it, right? So that's the key, right? Right. Is providing a simple platform, straightforward, right? Buy in a couple clicks.
So I want to ask about Houston as a home base for y'all. What's it been like? It sounds like you have careers. You all are career industrial professionals. Right. So now in the startup world, how has it been starting a company in Houston?
You know, Houston's been great. I mean, it's obviously, you know, moving here from West Texas or Midlands, kind of a, you know, little change of scenery for sure. But, you know, for us, it didn't make sense to headquarter our business anywhere else, just being that we're focused in the energy sector. And, you know, 90% of the decision makers are sitting right here in our backyard, you know. And so the other thing I'll say about Houston is we've been fortunate to hire some really great talent that's here in Houston looking to get into, you know, the tech startup space. And so, you know, I think at one time there probably wasn't a ton of tech startups, you know, in Houston. I think Houston as a whole is trying to change that, right, and get more innovative technology companies. I mean, Houston's a great city. And, I mean, you can just look around. Everything you need to be successful here, especially in our case, you know, focus in the energy sector. So, you know, Houston's been great. Not one complaint. I mean, the sun never shines, but other than that, everything's good.
I'm from Utah, so, I kind of miss my mountains a little bit. And
we don't have those.
My dry air, but kind of getting used to it all. And I think, I mean, I just echo what Adam said, right? We want it to go and be headquartered in a place, you know, if we're going to go play in a space, we want to be the very best in that industry. And so we had to go where the industry was best, and that's Houston. And I think our goal was, hey, let's be the very best tech company in Houston. And then once we get Houston, then it will be Texas. Then once we get Texas, it's going to be the U.S. And once we get the U.S., we're going to go outside of there. And that's just the type of guys we are, the partnership, you know, that we've taken through all of our companies is – we always wanted to bring excellence to whatever we're doing. And in order to be excellent, we had to be in the mecca of whatever it is we're doing. And that's here in Houston.
I think y'all are set up kind of perfectly to represent Houston and its growth as an innovation ecosystem. That's obviously what I spend my time doing, is covering all of the ecosystem, and to kind of see how you kind of represent the new age of oil and gas and energy and industry, but also the startups in Houston. And I like that you said best tech startup and not, you know, best energy tech startup.
Sure.
You know, you got
that's right,
the goals there.
That's right, we do.
Because I think it is interesting that Houston has been the energy capital of the world, right? But there's a struggle now to maintain that, and that comes with innovation and technology. I wonder if that's what y'all have observed as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, Houston will always, as far as I'm concerned, be the energy capital of the world, right? But as energy innovates, right, there's a pretty good chance that it will become a technology hub as well, right? So the ability to innovate in, you know, energy is going to take technology, right? And so I think it forces growth in the city of Houston, frankly. You know, for I what I can't see is a technology firm based in the energy space why you wouldn't be in Houston. Yeah. Right. It just doesn't make sense to me, right? If you're looking to grow a technology company focused in oil and natural gas, I mean, Houston's your boo.
Well, and conversely, like companies like Cottonwood Venture Partners, who are spending their time and energy and effort and their money back here in Houston to bring in tech talent to grow technology solutions for the industrial sector. And, you know, really, I think that's part of the promotion of Houston, right? Because, you know, we have to reach out and go reinvest into people to bring them back here and then grow those companies here in Houston. And so I think that's one of the great things that we've realized by being here is there are people willing to invest in our generation and in technology and to really make this industry much, much better, or, well, really as best as it can be.
I wonder, to kind of wrap up our discussion, what advice do you have for energy tech startups? You know, aside from being based here in Houston, sounds like that's a big one. But, you know, if you could give yourself advice before starting Hitch, what would it be?
Adam's the godfather. You go first, big boy.
I don't know what advice I'd really give. What I'd say is, you know, a lot of companies are focused on building great technology. And frankly, to be successful in this space, you have to focus on growing the business. I mean, revenue, when it comes to raising venture money, when it comes to raising private equity money, revenue is the key to that, right? So, you know, I think where a lot of people get caught up is they go and they build like a technology that can take drilling rigs to the moon, right? And they lose focus of, you know, the sales and BD side of the business, frankly. And so I guess the advice I'd give, if somebody was, you know, starting a company, figure out how to go out there and create, you know, revenue for your business. We always say at Hitch that progress is better than perfection, right? You know, and we stick by that. Is our technology perfect? No. Will it be someday? Yes. But today it's not, right? But it's a function of driving business through your platform, finding the inefficiencies and getting better, right? And so going out that the reverse and building great technology and then try to sell it, right? If you're in it to, you know, we're focused on hyper growth though, right? We're focused on growing really fast and that. So if that's not your forte, then fine. But if that is what you want to do, you know, revenue is the key to getting, you know, institutional money in the door.
And I'd just probably say to add on to Adam, I think there's two things that maybe we didn't know we were doing right that I would offer as advice back out, but looking kind of connecting the dots in reverse that I think were huge compliments to what we've been able to do is one, solve for a main vein problem in whatever industry you're doing. It's a lot easier to spend money on your biggest hurt, right, rather than a nice to have. And I think that's something we did. And then I think two, what we've learned is nobody does it alone. So ultimately, surround yourself with the very best people who, above all else, have ultimate loyalty and drive to the same vision that you have and solving the same problem, the same passion in solving the problem. And fortunately, I mean, because Adam and I have done so many different things together, we had that from the get-go, mm-hmm. but then we kind of took that same deal. And Adam, with his skill sets, people understood the value of what he was bringing to the table and were drawn to him. Mm-hmm. And hopefully I added somewhat to that. And we were able to bring together a team that ultimately didn't have a hard time buying into the vision. And, you know, together as a team, we were able to create a product that's like super cool and actually solves a really great problem. And it allows you to accelerate much, much quicker. And so yeah. from our tech guys to our sales engineers to our salespeople, our account executives, our CSMs, you know, our entire team, our marketing, you know, you put all of those pieces together and you surround yourself with people who are willing to stay up late, who are willing to work through the weekend, and that's the recipe for success. So if you don't have that, stop and go find it.
Well, it's great to see kind of y'all's teamwork, but now I want to ask, what is each of your roles? Do y'all each kind of balance off of your strengths and weaknesses?
I'm the janitor, so I just do what Adam wants, and he performs the magic and brings in all the customers. So.
No, so really, I mean, if you look at us, obviously we jointly run the company. You know, the titles are really unimportant as far as we're concerned, but somebody had to hold, you know, each title, and that's that. I mean, frankly, you know, Lance handles all the operations of the business. Stem to stern, okay. Right? And so I'm more focused on really the sales program of the business and in handling some of the.
He's being modest. That's not true. He does
handling the sales, like but everything. I mean everything that you know, legal and things of that sort. You know, investor interfacing with investors and things like that, raising money. You know, I'm kind of like the pawn on the chess on the chessboard.
Gotcha. How big is your team at this point?
So we are at 30 now.
Wow.
Expect to be probably somewhere in the 50 range by the end of this year. So, like Lance said, super fortunate to have some unbelievably talented people that surround us. And they're the reason that, you know, we have this opportunity to begin with. So, that's our team.
That's crazy. I don't know. Maybe I'm not paying attention to the details, but I don't know very many startups that have in just a couple of years gotten to that point in employee count and fundraising. So congrats on that.
Hey, thanks.
Well, thanks again for coming on. Very cool stuff. Can't wait to see where Hitch goes.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and stay up to date on all things Houston innovation at innovationmap.com.